The First Amendment to the Constitution begins with these words. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. What did they mean by those words, and how is it that many judges and law professors today think this means that God or the Bible can't be mentioned in the public arena? Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest for this segment is Kelly Shackelford, the founder and president of First Liberty, based in the Dallas area. First Liberty works around the country. It's a very successful legal organization dedicated to protecting religious freedom in America. Kelly, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Happy to do it, Jerry.
Okay, would it be safe to say that the founders cherished religious freedom in ways that we do not today in modern America?
Well, absolutely. I mean, number one, obviously there is, we become much more secularized in that the number of people who believe in God, the number of people who go to church, I mean, all those things are dramatically reduced. But even though we're still a country where people do believe in God, where it is still a part of all of our moorings of who we are, but the founders set in place great protections for religious liberty, and that started to be really come under attack around the 1940s and 60s, when we had this whole sort of change in values and this sort of revolution that went on with some of our culture, and the court started really attacking religious freedom, and we had some really bad decisions that created, I think, a perversion of what the First Amendment says about religious freedom. But the good news is we're starting to turn that around now. So that's the good news and at the end of really what's been a lot of attacks on religious freedom for most of our lifetime.
Now, what do you think the founders meant when they said no establishment of religion or no law respecting an establishment of religion should be passed by Congress? Let's begin with just that part. Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't want there to be a nationally established church. They'd come from the Church of England. They didn't want there to be one main church, that it was the national church, and then everybody was sort of persecuted to whatever extent for not being a part of that. And so that's why the very first thing is Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. They didn't want a religion established for them. They wanted freedom. And that followed by or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And so I think that was fairly well understood, but we had a case about 50 years ago called Lemon. It's perfectly named. It's called the Lemon case, where we had a more liberal Supreme Court, and they said, oh, no, it means a lot more than that. It means we're going to have separation of church and state. It means that if you're offended, you can bring a lawsuit. You can't bring lawsuits because you're offended. I mean, that's not enough to bring a lawsuit. But our whole lives, we have watched lawsuits if you're offended by religion, and it was the only exception. That was not, the founders would be appalled. I mean, that's why we've seen attacks on, nativity scenes at Christmas, Ten Commandments monuments, a menorah or a cross on a veterans memorial. Why? Because the founders would have said that was a problem. I mean, they would have been appalled that we would have said that's a problem. And so those are the attacks we've seen most of our lifetime. Now, I think that is changing now. We had our Bladensburg cross case at the Supreme Court 2 years ago, and we went after Lemon. And for the first time, we had five justices say, we're not following Lemon. And we are now we're turning away from that hostility to religion. And right now, after that case, what they said in that case is the presumption when it's religion in public is presumptively constitutional, not the opposite. And they've really flipped now the presumption. And I think we're going to start moving in a very different direction with the current justices we have on the Supreme Court.
Tell me a little bit about your own personal history. How did you get involved in fighting for religious liberty? I believe before you even started your organization, you were part of, other Christian legal ministry type, organizations and so.
Yeah, Jerry, back when I was in high school, I knew my gifts were in analytical thinking and speaking. And so I was kind of like, well, I either need to be a pastor or a lawyer. And people kind of laughed. They said, well, that's kind of like a God or Satan choice, to be a pastor or a lawyer. And I analyzed my DNA and realized I would probably do better at dispensing justice rather than mercy, maybe, and make a better lawyer. And really felt called to law school. Went to law school, got out. Did real well. Clerked for a federal judge, which you do for 1 year. You sort of research and write opinions. And when you do that, you sort of, it's a unique job to get, and so you get to see what it's like to be on the other side of the bench. And all the major law firms love that perspective, and they want to hire you. And so I had all those offers, and I just sat in my little clerk's office and felt like that I would suffocate if I went to do that. I just didn't feel like that's what God was calling me to do. And so I remember sitting in my little office, and I said, well, what do you want to do? And I thought, well, I want to use my legal skills. I feel like God showed me I should do that. But I want to help pastors and churches and religious freedoms and our founding principles. And I'd even like to go to seminary. And I laughed because there was no paying job to do that. 2 weeks later, out of the blue, I got called by two major national partners in big law firms. Never met these guys. They asked me to go to lunch. I went to lunch, and they said, look, we're donating our time for religious liberty, and we've gotten so many calls now coming in that it's hurting our ability to make a living. So we were wondering, would you be willing to come on, do legal cases, help pastors, churches, religious freedoms, and our founding principles, and you can even go to seminary part-time? And, that was just the Lord saying, we need to start a group. And I had no idea. And so we started a group. And 33 years later, First Liberty is now the largest legal group in the country. That all we do is, it was just something that God created because he knew that we were going to need to grow because of the level of attacks we're now seeing. We had over 700 legal matters last year, and it's getting more hostile, but I want people to be encouraged. The good news is we're winning. I mean, we won well over 90% of our cases last year. This country is built on religious freedom, and if you look at the way the justices and the judges are now going because of the excellent appointments of good judges who are originalists, we are now moving back to having more religious freedom than most people have seen in their lifetime. And so wow. I am encouraged about the direction we're going now. We've just got to be willing to fight.
Now, you've used the phrase founding principles a couple times in this discussion. What founding principles would you like to highlight that you have not already mentioned?
Our whole country was obviously founded on a certain philosophy. I mean, you can go back and look at, where a lot of things came from. I mean, the most cited, resource of the founders in look at Locke's treatise and some of the different things. Those, you'll find that it's scripture. There are over 1,200 citations to scripture. So the Judeo-Christian principles, Old Testament, New Testament principles that our country was built upon is why we have religious freedom. I mean, if we were a different religion, we might look at other countries. If they're not Judeo-Christian, they don't like religious freedom. They want you to follow their religion. The reason we have religious freedom for other faiths even is because of that Judeo-Christian philosophy and mindset and set of principles. And that really is why we have free speech. We have a lot of these things that you don't see in other countries. And really, ultimately, I think one of the things that separates us as a country from everybody else is that we think our freedoms come from God, and therefore no one can take them away. That is very unique. Everybody else thinks the government creates their freedoms. And so these are really very singular to America. And so it makes us who we are. And I think, when we start to lose those things, we really begin to come into another country. And I think what we're seeing now is which we, I don't think many of us ever thought we would in our lifetime, is really attempts at Marxist approaches, which Marxism has to remove religion, has to remove the church, synagogue, because those are competing philosophies, because it really is a religion of its own. A secular religion that takes away freedom and has its own view of nirvana, which is not very well thought through. It thinks that if you destroy and you have class warfare, that you'll just automatically end up in this great place. But it actually brings incredible evil, as we know from history and from looking at many other countries, the Soviet Union, other places. So these are very different thought systems, and our system is the best in the world. and it's one built on freedom and the ability of people to say things that we don't agree with, and the ability of people to go to churches and synagogues that we don't agree with, because we believe in freedom, and we believe that people's relationship with God is something that the government really has no authority over.
And conscience, right. You mentioned a study about 1,200 citations from the Bible. 1,200 citations in what come from the Bible?
Well, it's in Locke's treatise on government. It's probably the most used book by the founders in how to set up our government, and there are over 1,200 citations to Scripture in there.
Oh, I see. So that's from Locke itself.
A lot of people don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that a lot of the stuff we have, you can actually trace it back to Scripture. You know, things like no ex post facto laws, where you create a law and then use it to attack somebody for something they did before you passed the law. I mean, that's in Scripture, right? The idea of representative government, you know, you go back to the Old Testament, where they created leaders of hundreds and thousands, and that is representative government. So there's so many of these principles that the founders were looking at, and it's the Bible, if you look at the most quoted source or the most cited source by them in coming up with the system of government, it's the Bible. And Locke's treatise is, I think, one of the best examples. It's probably one of the most relied upon and very thoughtful analysis of how to structure government.
Okay, how about a comment on the name of the organization that you founded and that you head, First Liberty?
Yeah, people don't realize, but this is our First Liberty for a number of reasons. People immediately say, well, yeah, it's the first two clauses of the First Amendment, are the two religion clauses. But it's actually much more than that. The founders understood that if you lose this liberty, this freedom, you'll lose all your freedoms. And, I talked a little bit about this earlier, about how Marxism has, the first thing it has to do is kill the priests, the religious leaders, remove the church, because it's a competing ideology. And for people, and this is why this is important, even if you're not a person of faith at all, you're not religious at all, this is crucial to you. And I have people come up to me all the time that are supporters. I just had a guy just last week send me a check for $10,000. He's not a religious person. He just said, look, I grew up in Czechoslovakia. I saw them take down the religious symbols. Within weeks, we all lost our political freedoms. He said, I understand the connection, and I think that what you guys is the most important thing anybody's doing in this country, and I'm going to be supporting you from now on. And it's just because he lived through it, he saw it, and I best for those Americans who haven't seen that before, the explanation I would give them that's real simple as why this is true is the one thing that a totalitarian regime can never allow are these citizens who hold an allegiance to one higher than the government. Mm-hmm. So whenever that type of oppressive regime comes in, the first flashpoint will always be religious freedom, these people that won't bow to the government. And if you lose there, you'll lose all your freedoms. And so that's why this is the first freedom. This is the one you've got to keep, or you'll lose everything else.
Okay, we have 40 seconds to wrap up. FirstLiberty.org, that's your website for more information. What closing thought do you want to leave us? Are you optimistic or pessimistic about the future?
I'm optimistic. We have some huge cases right now at the Supreme Court. The Coach Kennedy case, the coach who was fired for praying on a knee after the game, that case is set up beautifully for a victory. I would encourage people to pray and follow that. The Navy SEALs case, where we're representing 35 Navy SEALs who they're trying to boot out of the service despite their being our most elite warriors because of their faith, we're winning that case. So we're winning. We just got to be willing to stand and fight, and I would encourage people, follow these cases, pray for these people, let other people know we're winning. And as you said, people can go to firstliberty.org and sign up and get the information on these cases.
Kelly Shackelford, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Happy to do it.